Browns training camp kicking off today officially. Started last week.
Felt like you were close to singing there. It felt like you were really close to singing there. Felt like you were really close to singing there, Daryl.
No, sir. We do not sing. We do not dance. We do plenty to embarrass themselves, and we are not doing that.
But if you would like to take that audio of Daryl and put it to song and maybe give him a nice golden tan as well.
Oh, good Lord.
Send it to Kid Carmen's show on X.
As if we need to encourage the haterade brigade.
I'm just trying to find creative Clevelanders.
We have plenty of them.
I want to showcase their talents.
We have a lot of very talented artists in this town. The t-shirt economy is booming. That is for sure. It's Daryl Ryder, Danny Cunningham with you. Browns training camp has been underway, but it really gets underway today. The first full team practice just before 4 o'clock. We'll start hearing from folks in the noon hour. And then the first fan practice, or I should say practice open to the fans in Berea, will be Friday at 2 p.m., the first of eight. The last one's going to be on Monday, August 4th. So over a month between the final open practice, Danny, until the season opener, September 7th, against the Cincinnati Bengals. That's going to be a very, very long time for Browns fans to wait for their team to play
meaningful games. Like, they'll see preseason games. They'll see plenty.
You act like seeing preseason games is a treat.
I mean, watching training camp practice is not a treat either.
Actually, it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Watching training camp stinks. It's awful.
You know what's fun about training camp practice?
Nothing. Nothing.
No, there are things fun.
No, there's not.
Yeah, you sound like me.
No, I sound like somebody who played football in college and went through training camps. It's not fun. Well, it's the worst part of the calendar.
It's fun to watch. We had John Greco on earlier this week, and yeah, he did mention he did not enjoy training camp all that much. Yeah, I don't think that there's many a player that enjoys it, but there are a lot of things enjoyable to watch, especially if you're a fan, certainly me, being on the sidelines, covering the team. I really enjoy paying attention to the coach-player interaction. Now, we're not supposed to report any specifics regarding those interactions and whatnot, but I do get a kick out of really being able to hear and pay attention to things that are said as the coaching up process gets underway. I will be the quarterback tracker that I will be running is how many times is Jimmy Haslam in the huddle with the four quarterbacks while they're doing the in practice film review, because that's the thing they do now. They've done it the last couple years. It's fantastic technology. They get cameras all over the field. And they are able to put they can literally just run a play, run over to the TV monitor, and break that play down on film.
Very similar to how they have tablets on the sidelines during games,
right,
and they can see things that have happened on the previous series,
right,
or at other points during the game.
But I'm going to be counting how many times Jimmy Haslam is standing with the quarterbacks as the in-practice film review coaching session is taking place, and whether or not Jimmy is going to be in there pointing things out to the quarterbacks, doing his own coaching.
You think he's a good quarterback, Coach Daryl? Is that what you're saying?
Based on what I've seen since they took over the team, no, they're not very good at picking quarterbacks. No, they're not good at coaching them either. Kevin Stefanski might be. I mean, he's made a few guys look serviceable.
I think he's made some bad quarterbacks look good.
Like, serviceable. I'm not going to say good, but he made him serviceable. I mean, he helped Joe Flacco, get dusted
off. Get his
off
career back.
Be competent. Like, that's where I'm at with quarterbacks this year. This was the thing yesterday. I'm like, I just want competent quarterback play. There are so many statistics out there that I have. And look, I want fans to get all excited and pumped up for training camp today. So I'm going to keep those in the holster here and save them for mid-October when we definitely need to be pulling them out again. But there are so many things that happen organically around the NFL when it comes to quarterback play. But here in Cleveland, it's a novel concept. Like Joe Flacco throwing for 300 yards, what was it, four times in five of those starts? Like,
yeah.
That I don't think happened in Browns history ever before, but like that happens around the NFL all the time, right? They got four guys to pick from. I say it's a two-man race. The team, Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry, Tommy Rees, they will tell you it's a four-man race. I don't think it's conceivable. I don't think it's fair. You're going to end up with a rookie, a third-round pick, or a fifth-round pick as your starter in week one under, here's the caveat, under circumstances that you control. But one of the challenges for the Browns over the years when it comes to these quarterback competitions, you know this, Danny, is circumstances often dictate their process instead of the process dictating the circumstances. Now, in some cases, the team is to blame for that, but in a lot of cases, it's been situations out of their control. Like, for instance, them playing Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Like them playing Cody Kessler. Like them playing Austin Davis or a Connor Shaw or a Kevin Hogan, right? They
depends how deep into the Rolodex you want to go.
Oh, trust me. I've got the full Rolodex sitting in front of me right now. I opened the Rolodex. I opened the can of worms because it's hard keeping track of all of these guys, right? It's not easy. 40 deep now. Looking for 41. And hopefully 41 is there for a while. It was nice of Baker Mayfield to give us a three-year hiatus. Let the carousel rest for a little bit. But I don't know if there is a right answer. I don't know if there is a solution to that problem right now.
I don't think there is at this moment, but I do think that one of the rookies could prove us wrong at a certain point. I just don't know that right now is the time to do that. And to the point about it not being a four-man race, I think you're right about that. I think there are two different two-man races going on. I don't think it would be wise for the Browns to be having Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders in consideration to be the starting quarterback week one. I don't think that's what training camp should be about for them. I don't think you're going to maximize them as quarterbacks, if you're putting them under that type of pressure right away. Now, if we get to week 10, that might be a different conversation. I would not be surprised, Daryl, in the least bit, if both of those guys started games at quarterback this year. I would be surprised if either of those guys started week one. I think that the battle for the starting quarterback is between Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco. I think there are two different two-man races going right now, one for the starter and then who can be the third quarterback, the guy that's going to be active on game days between Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel? That is the thing that's the way that I think you have to look at this. But what I'm curious from your perspective is what exactly are you looking for from the quarterbacks as training camp gets started?
Well, obviously you got to pay attention to the reps because, and I know Kevin Stefanski during mandatory minicamp had said, hey, let's not read too much into who is on the field with certain guys and all that. Kevin, that's what we do. That's number one, okay? And it also, I think, foretells. Like, Shedeur Sanders has not gotten first-team reps yet. There's no way I can sit here and say to fans, as popular as he is amongst fans, right, one of the top-selling rookie jerseys in the league right now.
That's how he's always going to be. He's going to be a popular guy.
There's no way I can sit here and tell fans that I feel like that Shedeur Sanders is a serious contender for the starting job week one. I can't do it. Dylan Gabriel has gotten 11-on-11 first team reps. I feel like that they were managing Joe Flacco. There's nothing to learn from Joe Flacco.
Right. What is a guy at his age and his experience level going to get out of mandatory minicamp? Even I think you can ask the question, what does his role look like at the start of training camp? Does it look similar to what it was during mandatory minicamp? Or is it something to where, okay, no, now he is full go. This is just like he looks like a guy competing for a starting quarterback position in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't know what there is for him to prove. For me, they've got to take a look at Kenny Pickett and figure out if they're what they believe. Okay. They believe they can fix this kid. Whatever went wrong in Pittsburgh under Matt Canada, they love the intangibles. They love the physical skill set. Can they fix him? They have to, for me, they have to figure that out. With Dylan Gabriel, again, the physical tools are there. They're happy with that. They like the way he sees, processes, views the game. But I think you got to figure out, can he see between the weeds and all the traffic that happens in front of him? And then with Shador, it's can they whatever they don't like in his game, right? Because there's a lot of things they do like.
Sure.
I know I'm not trying to spin that negative. Like, there are a lot of things they like, but I believe there are things in his game that they believe will hold him back at the NFL level. They have to figure out in this camp, can they knock that out of his game? Can they get whatever that is, whether it's habits, whether it's technique, whether it's footwork, whatever. Can they get that out of his game? To me, that's what training
camp...
What
do you think they don't like in his game?
I think that I call it happy feet.
Okay.
Because you look at what he went... And you understand why he has the happy feet. Because of what he went through at Colorado.
Very bad offensive line.
Awful. I mean, he had three guys in his face by the time the snap got into his hands, right? And I think that he's programmed in some of these drills where it's you're either in the gun or you're under center, and it's a 3 or 5 or 7-step drop. Read 1, 2, 3, let it rip, right? And this is just my observation. There are instances when they're going through those drills where there is no physical pressure, where it feels like sometimes he's simulating the pressure in his head. Like, okay, I'm going to have pressure coming from my left. I'm going to step up in the pocket. Okay, now there's a guy coming to my right. And so where it's like he doesn't need to be doing that right now. It's about getting the ball in your hands. There's read number one. There's read number two. There's read number three. Get the ball out. Pick a read, let it rip, and go, right? And so, I, this is just my opinion, my take on the situation, having gone back and looked at some of the video that I shot, looked at some of his Colorado tape and things like that. So I don't think that this camp really is much about, kind of officially, it's the first full team practice. He's an outstanding writer for NFL.com. He is Nick Shook. Nick, good morning, bud.
Hey, Daryl, thanks for having me.
You betcha. How fired up are you for Browns Camp 2025 in the four-barrel quarterback competition?
Fired up is one way to put it. Intrigued. Ready to see the madness, I suppose, and see how this all shakes out. Fascinated probably more than anything just by how a team can navigate a situation like this. We just don't see these very often, especially without one clear-cut starter or some sort of long-term future plan in place. So, yeah, excited to see how it shakes out just because I would like those in Cleveland and those who, you know, support the Browns to get some sort of understanding of, you know, where this team is headed at the most important position.
Best way to pick the quarterback: flip coins, draw straws, or pick a name out of a hat?
Pin the tail of the donkey.
It's a better answer.
It's new. We should try that, probably.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we haven't gone wrong with that one yet. So I can't necessarily knock that, right? It could work. You never
know. I like it.
Can you legitimately, Nick, have a four quarterback battle in a training camp, or is this more of a two separate two quarterback battles that the Browns are going to have?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, unless, you know, one of the youngsters blows them away. I mean, you get a lot of time, but we're not in the days of two-a-days anymore, really. You know, don't get me wrong, these camp days are long, and, you know, whether it's on-field work or, you know, stuff in meetings and guys going through walkthroughs late at night, you know, before the next session of practices and everything else, there are ways to make gains, but with the limited amount of reps that they work with now under the, you know, the CBA agreement and everything else that they've kind of negotiated over the years to make this portion a little bit, you know, easier on their bodies, you know, understandably so to a degree, you just don't have as many reps. But I mean, it's more than you're going to get in season. So I guess there's some way to, you know, reveal a little bit about these guys. It's really about intent. You know, do you go into camp knowing that you know what Joe Flacco is and you need to see it from Kenny Pickett, but you really want to know between these two rookie quarterbacks who might be the better one? Or do you go in with the idea that you are trying to figure out your order of four, which, by the way, I think could realistically be an order of four and not three, and, you know, you cut one at the end of camp, or you try to hide them on the practice squad or that sort of thing. I think that if you go with the latter, you could kind of reveal a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, in the way that we look at a quarterback competition and we think about reps and everything else, there's just not enough to go around to really get a good look at all four.
If you were in Kevin Stefanski's shoes or Tommy Reese's or Andrew Berry's, what would you do with that spot and these four guys? Would you keep all four after the cutdown day and maybe see if you can go a week or two with them? Or would you try and pare things down before you get to that preseason finale and you ultimately make a decision who your starter is going to be?
Well, with no disrespect to Joe Flacco, I would try to turn this into a three-man competition and try to weed somebody out relatively early to get it down to a two-man competition so that I don't have to keep all four, so that I can have that extra roster spot to use elsewhere. And I think, honestly, you know, when they drafted Dillon Gabriel, when they moved up to get him, that was the idea. It's just that Shador ended up being available still in the fifth round, and, you know, what's the risk of a fifth-round pick on a guy like that? So I would try to, you know, work it down to three, or I would at least keep my eyes, you know, peeled for, you know, potential injuries elsewhere and, you know, if you want to move one of these guys or not. But, like, if you think about long-term planning and you think about, you know, where Joe Flacco is right now, you know what he is. There's nothing to learn about Joe Flacco other than, do you still have enough in the tank to play, which is kind of debatable based on how he played in Indianapolis last year. What you don't know is, where is Kenny Pickett? Can he be a guy that can handle a starting job? You know, he's still young. Is he a guy with a future, or do we need to figure out what we have in these two rookies? But you kind of have to move one aside to figure out who you have in the rest of the other three with the idea that, all right, let's not hold all four on the roster going into, you know, week one of the season.
Nick, what needs to happen between now and the end of the regular season for us to be having a conversation talking about, you know what, maybe the Browns didn't necessarily find a franchise quarterback, but this year at that specific spot can be viewed as a success?
That's a great question, because it is an all or nothing business that is the NFL. You either discover that you have the guy or you don't. I mean, if you look at Pickett's time in Pittsburgh, it took him a few years for them to realize that they didn't want him. You know, he had his flashes, his moments, he had his concussions, he had his other injuries. And I mean, I remember talking to, you know, a Steelers assistant going into the 2023 season and saying that, you know, this has got to be the year for him. This is it. Like, this has got to be the year for him. No, in fact, it was going into last year. And then, you know, a few days later, they parted with him entirely and went for Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. So, figuring that out, I think, would be considered a success. If you could, you know, figure out if he's going to be anything more than a career backup, which I lean toward him being a career backup, it would be a great success if you could get some sort of proof out of Dillon Gabriel or Shador Sanders that you have a guy who could at least compete for a starting job going into 2026. And if you get none of that out of all of this, it would be a success if they were just competitive enough to be worth watching on Sunday, no matter who's playing quarterback among those four.
NFL.com's Nick Shook joining us on the fan hotline. Nick, with the Quinshon Judkins situation, do they need to bring in another running back here?
Yeah, I mean, they threw a lot at the position going into this season, and understandably so, because it's been a revolving door at the position for the last 2 years, ever since Nick Chubb really got hurt in that week 2 game against Pittsburgh a couple of years ago. I liked the way it looked on paper going into camp with all these options. I would not mind if they kicked the tires on somebody else, just because, I mean, you pretty much know what you have in Jerome Ford. You know who Pierre Strong is. Dylan Sampson is now the one that makes, you know, you're kind of curious about what's going to go up with him, because, you know, he is a draft pick. He was a guy who was a productive runner at Tennessee, but the not having Judkins in the fold, yeah, it feels like there's a void. So I would, if I were them, I would at least explore the option of another running back. But I would also caution to say, Browns fans who are still upset about Nick Chubb not signing there, that was probably never going to happen. Don't get upset about that. But yeah, I would consider another running back.
As the Browns look to return to their old offense that Kevin Stefanski brought here in 2020, and you look at what that running game looked like when this Browns era was at its peak, and you look at maybe who could replicate that, what names do you think of as running backs that could, that are potentially available, that could come in and maybe make some slight impact in that room?
Running backs who are available is a little bit trickier of a question, because it's a position that, you know, we see a lot of committee backfields in the NFL, and then we see the handful of stars in the NFL, and you kind of don't really get anything in between. I mean, I think about guys like, you know, Aaron Jones, who actually did pretty well in Minnesota last year, but I think more about the Dalvin Cooks, the one cut guys. And yet, you know, it's, when it comes to the current state of the league, it's, you know, you just throw a certain amount of, you know, a certain guy back there, and then, you know, he has some success. So I don't know if I could say off the top of my head, you know, among the available running backs who would fit best, but I would definitely look for the one cut guys that, that, you know, you're going to run that bit of a wide zone. You're going to build out a play action. You just need him to kind of, you know, sift through the defense, hit the one cut and go. Then, and, you know, I would keep an eye on one guy, Dalvin's younger brother, James Cook, in Buffalo, because it seems like Buffalo doesn't really appreciate him very much and haven't really, you know, participated in contract extension talks with him and have been pretty, you know, obvious that they don't really want to do that at the position. He's still under contract this year, but long term, if everything works out and this entire regime doesn't change in Cleveland, I'd keep an eye on him.
Is Mason Graham one of the most or least talked about top five picks in recent memory?
Yeah, right behind the most least talked about number one pick in recent memory in Cam Ward. And that's what happens when a team trades up to two to draft Travis Hunter. And, you know, when you have the collection of other players in this draft, this is going to be a weird draft. We already kind of knew that going in, that it wasn't a great draft overall. I think that a lot of the steam that would come with the fifth overall pick in a town like Cleveland was kind of eliminated when they traded back from 2 to 5 to spend that pick and didn't draft Hunter, which I think we'd heard a lot of people convincing themselves over multiple weeks that that's who they wanted them to take, and, you know, so on and so forth. But I don't think it was a terrible move. I think it was the smart move, because Travis Hunter, as my friend at Sports Illustrated, Connor Orr, described very astutely right after the pick, Travis Hunter is a great football experiment, and I think that football experiment did not need to take place within the current state of the Cleveland Browns organization. I think that the Browns did themselves a favor by trading back, getting the extra first-round pick next year, and avoiding all the spotlight and attention that comes with having Travis Hunter, because I don't think that they're necessarily built to maximize his talents on both or either side of the ball right now, and Jacksonville can be the one to take that risk. And there's a domino effect there that affects Cam Ward, it affects Mason Graham, and it affects the excitement for a player who is playing a position that typically isn't very glamorous. But I think Browns fans are going to be really pleased with him over time. I do. I think it was a smart decision, and they'll be really pleased next year to have that extra first-round pick, too.
Do you think that, just as far as football goes, we should be talking more about Cam Ward after being the number one overall pick?
Absolutely. It kind of mystifies me, to be honest with you. Other than the way that I just explained it is the only way that I can kind of make sense of it. But, you know, this is also part of the fact that he's playing in Tennessee, that, you know, even unless they're absolutely amazing, the Titans are a team that struggles to make national headlines. They just are. You know, they were the number one seed in the AFC a few years ago, and they lose at home the divisional round to Joe Burrow's Bengals on their way to the Super Bowl, and it feels like nobody's talked about them since then. And they had some good teams over the years, but they're just not a super, you know, I don't know if I would like to say super marketable, but they're just not one of the legacy franchises. They're not one that commands a lot of attention outside of the Nashville area. So the fact that they got the number one overall pick, who is not overly expressive off the field, kind of a perfect marriage if you think about it, but it's a lack of, you know, a headline generator. It just, there's not enough attention paid to, especially when the guy right after you is somebody who certainly commands a ton of attention. But Cam Ward, I think, is going to steady this franchise in Tennessee and be a good player, and if not a great player, and be exactly what they needed at quarterback. And we'll end up talking about him before long, because you can't ignore, you know, successful football players in the NFL for very long.
Nick, the Browns going to unveil their third helmet. It's most likely going to be brown. We saw the whatever that was, the Bane uniforms the Steelers put out. The Saints now have a gold jersey. Are we getting to a point where the uniform thing starting to jump the shark here, not just in the NFL, but in pro sports in general?
No, Daryl, you're such a throwback. No, I'm just kidding.
I hate on everything. I'm a wet blanket.
I hate everything. Look, it's kind of weird, to be honest, because college football is what kicked off the whole obsession with football uniforms and how creative you could get. And it was Oregon. And before you knew it, Texas Tech had this crazy uniform. And everybody did. Before long, everybody did. Even Ohio State ends up rolling out an all-gray uniform, which I thought was fantastic. But if you look at the way that uniform trends have gone in the last, really the last 5 years, but I would say the last 2 to 3 years especially, and it starts in college, there's a lot of focus on going back to classic looks, going to what they call the modern retro or the modern classic, whatever they want to call it. The NFL, meanwhile, decided after years that the one shell rule wasn't necessary and that they could, you know, introduce alternate talents. And at first it made sense because you're like, all right, well, now you can do throwbacks. That's really what makes sense. And then other teams just got creative with it and got kind of wacky with it and just rolled out whatever type of different helmet they wanted. And now it's kind of opened the floodgates to do all these different things with uniforms. Now, I am not upset about, you know, some of the ambitious endeavors and upon which the teams like the Chargers have embarked, or the Saints bringing back the gold jersey, which they've only worn once for one game in their history. But I think that the alternate helmet stuff has gone a little too far. The Jaguars white helmet, the Packers white helmet. The Packers don't need a white helmet. Not every team needs an alternate helmet, I think, or at least makes one just to make one. And so, yeah, I think we're getting to that point where we're going to get some uniforms where we're going to think, yeah, it probably shouldn't have gone that far. I'm a little curious, if not concerned, to see if the Browns end up in that group.
We'll see. We'll find out here in a matter of either minutes or hours what they came up with. Nick, you're the best as always. Really appreciate you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, there you go. He is Nick Shook from NFL.com. Thanks to Nick Shook for hopping on with us there. I thought he had some interesting thoughts there, Danny, on the quarterback situation and how if he were in, whether it's Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Berry, Tommy Rees, whoever's going to, you know, make this decision on the quarterback, it seems like he's ready to set Joe Flacco aside.
Yeah, and I can understand that because Joe Flacco's not the future, right? Like Joe Flacco, if he plays this season, and I would not expect Joe Flacco to play the entire season, but if he does play this season for the Browns, can you expect him to play next season for the Browns? No, you can't. And this year, for as painful as this is to say, this year, the standard for the Browns is not to make the playoffs. The standard for the Browns is not to be a true contender. Next year, that could be different. Next year, it could be a team that has postseason aspirations and expectations, but Joe Flacco is not going to be part of that. So while I do think it's a good story,
right,
that Joe Flacco is back this year, I don't know necessarily what the Browns have to gain for their future by having him play significant time this season.
You're starting him week one, though, right?
100%. Yeah. That's what's happening.
I think the only way that he plays all season is we've seen one of the greatest seasons of all time, right? That's the only way that you have four quarterbacks and the 40-year-old man is the one that gets all the snaps.
Yeah, he does what he did in 2023 over that 5-game stretch, except for it goes over 17.
Well, now you're talking about like they're in the playoffs, right? And now you're talking about like talk about Joe Flacco MVP, right? It's the only way that he would be starting all 17 games, or probably more than 6 games.
I think that 6-game mark is a very, very good pivot point for the Browns. When you look at what their first 6 games are,
yeah.
I know a lot of people on this station have talked about this, and I've been one of them. But when I think you look at what the first 6 games for the Browns look like, Owen, you look after that and say, okay, well, things probably not going to go great. I think even if you're the most optimistic Browns fan, you're thinking 3-3 is a gigantic win after 3 games. But if you're less than that, I think it's hard to sell that you're in contention.
The outside
and if you're not
factor,
in contention, then you make the move.
The outside factor is that Jacksonville pick. What have they been doing for 6 weeks as well? And then you start to look at, well, how do we package those two things? And either A, move up to get the guy we want to be the future, or B, maybe they think they've found the future and how do we get weapons? Right. And weapons possible.
They are, right? To give the Browns front office credit, because I'm not a believer in the Jacksonville Jaguars this year, and I don't think very many people are. I think that the Browns are very well set up to, if one of these quarterbacks that they drafted this year, and I wouldn't bet on it because you don't bet on third and fifth round picks to be franchise quarterbacks right away. But if one of those guys somehow, some way is just that, the Browns are in a great position because they will be able to get whoever they want at the top of the draft next year. And that to me is a huge win.
Since 1999, and this is how I know Joe Flacco is not starting 17 games, especially at 40 years old. The Browns have had three seasons in which they have had one single quarterback start the entirety of the season. Tim Couch did it in 2001. Team went 7-9. Baker Mayfield did it in 2019 when they went 6-10. He also did it the following year in 2020. He went 11-5. That is it. They have required multiple quarterbacks to get through the schedule each and every other year.
To the Browns. I don't even want to rag on the Browns about that because how many teams now...
I'm not ragging on them. I'm just presenting the fact.
Well, no, I was going to make a comment, but how many teams now in the NFL go through, even great teams, how many of them go through a full season with one quarterback starting all 17 games? I think there are more teams that have multiple guys start games at quarterback there this year.
It's because the season's longer now.
Because the season's longer, and it is tough to stay healthy for 17 games.
I said it at the time, if you thought getting through a 16-game schedule was challenging, just wait till you get through 17. We're seeing that with 17, and now they're going to go to 18.
I would bet at least 20 of the 32 teams in the NFL this year have multiple quarterbacks start a game. The Browns will certainly be one of them, but I would bet that you're looking at 10 to 12 teams have their quarterbacks start all 17 games.
Well, the Browns definitely will have a set of uniforms for every quarterback they'll end up starting this year. The new helmet comes out at some point, whether it's this morning or this afternoon here. The Browns will be unveiling their third alternate helmet. Of course, they've got the traditional orange helmet with the Oreo stripe, as I like to call it. They've got the white helmet, which I absolutely love. And then I believe they're adding a brown helmet to the mix. And I don't know what uniform combination that's going to look good with.
None.
But they're doing it. This is something that's been in the works for a couple of years. In fact, J.W. Johnson was on, I believe it was with Baskin and Phelps a few years ago, when he revealed that, yes, in fact, that was happening. It was close to after that white helmet was unveiled. We saw the Pittsburgh Steelers unveil this week, Danny, the Bane uniforms, I call them, because that's what they look like. We talked about with Nick Shook there a few minutes ago. The Saints are bringing back a gold jersey that they wore. Buccaneers creamsicles are back, so they get a standing ovation there, because I love the creamsicles of the Buccaneers there. But I just feel like we are getting into the level of ridiculousness. We're getting into level of Oregon Ducks football program stupidiculous with these uniform combinations now that are seeping into the NFL.
I don't mind teams having a lot of different uniform combinations as long as it looks good. Like, I think for as many different things that Oregon has trotted out there, I think Oregon generally looks pretty good with the uniforms that they have. Like, they might have a lot of different things, and we can make fun of them for having so many different helmets and different uniforms and stuff like that. But largely, their identity is a pretty clean-looking one, where the Pittsburgh uniforms that the Steelers trotted out there earlier this week, I think those are hideous. The gold jerseys for the Saints, they're fine. I don't necessarily love that shade of gold. The brown helmet that the Browns seemingly are going to unveil today, I think looks terrible. And the Browns, Daryl, I do think, considering their colors are brown and orange, which can be hard to work with.
They have,
I think,
far,
they do a great job with the cards they're dealt for their colors.
Bad.
But like, I think their uniforms look really, I don't know that they could have better looking uniforms for what colors they have. Because you think back to when Johnny Manziel was wearing the uniforms he was wearing here. Not just did Johnny look bad, but he was wearing some bad uniforms too. Right? Like, the Browns right now, I think, look as good as they possibly can aesthetically, given their color palette.
Here's what I always go back to. Clean and classic always works, and the New York Yankees never change their uniforms.
It's true. They don't.
Like, and look, I get the marketing aspect. I like the
but
Guardians.
But you also have to know, not every team has an iconic look.
Right. The Browns have an iconic look.
I
and
think
the
it's
Yankees also wore more than pinstripes and gray. They have that dark colored whatever blue it is that looks almost black that they've brought in with because everybody's went to a dominant color shade of at least one. You know, Guardians have a blue and a red now.
Just, you know what? Can we get a home and away and an alternate? That's it. That's all you need. Home, away, alternate.
I mean, to be fair, the Browns only have that right now, right? They've got brown, white, and the throwback white.
Yeah,
they don't have more than that.
They got three sets of pants they can wear with two different jerseys.
Pants are pants, it's fine.
They've got a bunch of color combinations they can do.
I don't think they have. I think the helmet, the new helmet that's rumored to be coming out is bad. But like the jerseys and stuff, I think they're fine.
I'm interested to see what uniform combination that. I think the brown helmet absolutely has to be worn with white.
I think it should absolutely
not be
worn.
Because we know the jokes are going to be told if they wear it with the brown. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just saying, the jokes will be there, and they'll especially be there if they lose. Nanny, it was fun. 4 hours flew by.
It was a blast.